In this conversation, we welcome David Parkinson and Ben DeWall from Musket, a next-generation payments company focused on Bitcoin and stablecoin solutions. They discuss the founding of Musket, the importance of Bitcoin as a medium of exchange, as well as the challenges and opportunities given the current regulatory landscape. Conversation gets into Musket's innovative services from payment processing to a payroll solution and their go-to-market strategy, emphasizing the need for seamless Bitcoin adoption in various sectors. As a reminder, this podcast is for educational purposes only. If you enjoy the content we're producing, please remember to subscribe, share, and comment, as this all helps us greatly.
This isn't for everyone. It's for the ones who know the old system is broken and are ready to build something that lasts. Welcome to the Build with Bitcoin podcast.
I'm co-host Israel Munoz, joined with co-host Lynn Bairstow. Today, we have the big pleasure of welcoming onto the podcast David Parkinson and Ben DeWall from Musket, CEO and CTO, respectively. David, Ben, welcome. We're very happy to have you on and get into today's conversation on Musket.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Yep, happy to be here.
We'd like to start with a little bit about, you know, the founding team, of course, getting to know a little bit about your backgrounds and how you came together to build Musket. David, definitely want you to touch a little bit on the project with the mayor of London when you were with PricewaterhouseCoopers. Ben, you have a fascinating background yourself on mining and head of engineering at Swan. So if we can just start there, can you tell us a little bit about what brought you to Musket, respectively?
Sure. I mean, I'll tell you how I met Ben first, and then we'll go back in time. We'd had COVID, and, you know, everyone had been locked up and indoors for so long, and an event was arranged in the UK. It was a conference in Edinburgh, a Bitcoin conference, and it was a really well-attended event, some really good speakers, and Ben, for some reason, was there. Maybe when Ben's giving his update, he can explain why on earth he found himself in Edinburgh when he wasn't living in the UK at the time. But yeah, it was just very fortuitous. I think it was the end of the day. Great for people to get together again after such a long time during COVID. And I think the general excitement of that and being amongst Bitcoiners and just talking about all things Bitcoin. I was at the bar after the event, maybe about five or six beers deep. And I saw a chap with a pork pie hat on, tapped him on the shoulder, asked if he was Knut Svandholm. He turned around and said he wasn't, but we had a good chat anyway, told me who he was. And I recognized Ben from his Twitter presence anyway. So we had a good chat. And it turned out that Ben was exactly what I was looking for at the time, which was someone to challenge the architectural decisions. You know, we had a head of engineering in place, but I wanted someone with a really broad skill set, you know, someone who could look across the tech stack, not just from a detailed engineering perspective, but also be that pivot point between the product roadmap, the long-term vision, and be the CTO. And it started out as an advisory role, and then more and more stars aligned, and Ben's role shifted, and you know, at a time when we were starting to secure some early stage funding, and it meant that we could bring Ben in full time to the CTO role. So so always go out to bars after Bitcoin events is my and chat with strangers is my advice from that one. If I wind the clock back, where have we come from, or how did we sort of get going? So when was this? In 2014, my background's a mix of management consultancy, telecommunications. I spent some time at BT in the UK in my early days, which is kind of equivalent to Verizon in the US. About 10 years across management consulting, EY, PwC, typically cost reduction projects, a lot of commercial projects, a lot of outsourcing projects. And then latterly, about 7 years in the strategy team at Sky Comcast. So launching streaming businesses across Europe. So primarily Ireland, Austria, and some minor projects in Germany. And, you know, the final role that I had there was the one in the Sky Comcast as a streaming. But before I joined there, I was working for PricewaterhouseCoopers, and the project was a standard classic cost reduction. It was working for the government. The government had engaged us as the client, and they said, look, here's £1 billion worth of spend, here's public procurement money. reduce £100 million run rates annually, take it out of expenditure, be more efficient, you know, because government spend is usually terrible. And you know, your ultimate client is effectively Boris Johnson, who was the mayor of London, but went on to then become prime minister. But, it was a classic cost reduction project. But the side quest that I was given by Transport for London at the time, who was an entity. So within City Hall, there's the Fire Brigade, Metropolitan Police, Transport for London, and the entity that owns the Olympic Park. Transport for London, by far the biggest, you know, all of the tube trains under London, the tunnels, even the overground buses and other things like that. They basically said, look, we think that there might be a possibility to use Bitcoin to pay our major suppliers. And this is to, the idea being that they would settle, you know, invoices of £5 to £10 million for enormous capital infrastructure projects, in Bitcoin, because they thought what they wanted to do was test whether they could trace every single transaction, act as the exchange of redemption, and then map the flow of funds so that they could see whether what was being declared in the tender project before it was awarded as profit was actually being underreported or not. And, you know, ideally, that there would be some cost savings and a more efficient practice in government. And I think the political side of that was also then that they could say a London-centric project has also benefited economically the other regions of the UK, other areas. So it's quite a nice idea. A little bit sort of all-seeing eye, totalitarian, central bank, digital currency-esque, if you ask me. But it was interesting nonetheless. I did the research. We pitched it to them. It didn't go anywhere. It was deemed too innovative at the time. This was 2014. But from then on, I was hooked. And I think just a few years worth of thinking and ruminating on Bitcoin, how it works, doing some research in bizarre threads and forums online, because there was nowhere near the amount of education that there is and awareness that there is now. I just accrued all this knowledge in my head, and myself and a friend said, look, let's run a training course. The reporting that we see and the information out there in the public is just nonsense. So why don't we set the record straight? Let's run every 6 weeks a training course. So we brought VCs, accountants, anyone from finance, law, or professional services typically together. We hired a room at the Institute of Directors just off Pall Mall by Trafalgar Square in London every 6 weeks. And we taught people. So we just taught them for 6 or 7 hours about Bitcoin, the history of money, various economic theories, how Bitcoin changes the world, how it changes operating models, how it's the native currency for the internet and the forthcoming AI era. And then the difference between all of the other types of tokens and why you shouldn't confuse Ethereum, Solana, and all these other, I mean, Solana, I don't think even existed then, but all these other tokens with Bitcoin. Bitcoin is something fundamentally different. So, you know, we would talk about that. And then essentially the one question, the reason why we sat here today, that would always happen in every session was, look, you've just spent 6 hours telling me why Bitcoin is money. I can't buy a sandwich with it. I can't buy a coffee with it. It doesn't pass the test of being money. So, you know, we sat back during COVID and said, look, I think that's possibly the end of our education phase. Why don't we actually just put our experience set together, find a team and build some products and take them to market to solve the exact problem of Bitcoin being usable as money. And, you know, the Lightning Network was still maturing at that time. And that's what we did. And we settled on the idea of Musket and the proposition. And yeah, closed at an early stage funding round. And here we are.
Actually, David, maybe before Ben jumps in with his background, maybe we should explain exactly what Musket is and the services that it provides.
So Musket is we call it a next generation payments company. The next generation component primarily being Bitcoin and stablecoin led. So we see that as the future of money. We see that as the future of both individuals and businesses being able to transact globally, instantly, frictionlessly, and at next to zero cost. The big trouble that we saw in the world and the big thing preventing Bitcoin from being adopted as money was that you typically had too much friction in the journey. If you're a hospitality owner, if you own a bar, a restaurant, or any kind of venue, you typically needed a second device. You typically needed to then train the staff, keep that device accessible and charged. And then when you've sold and advertised that you can buy goods and services from you in Bitcoin, you then have a reconciliation and accounting challenge. Then there's a tax consideration, and wrapped in all of that, there's a regulatory consideration. So, you know, having separate devices and having all of that friction involved, we saw a negative impact because there are venues in the UK that advertised they were accepting Bitcoin. Bitcoiners would go and try and buy stuff from them, specifically whether it was a meal or just an ice cream or a coffee, and the device wouldn't work or it wasn't charged, and ended up being sort of a downward spiral. So, you know, there's this positive groundswell of movement, and actually the people couldn't do what they wanted to do, and they wanted to get that nice social media moment of buying a coffee in Bitcoin, etc. And they were denied that. So we said, actually, look, we have to make this flawless, frictionless, and super easy to use. So what we did is, to answer your question, is we came onto the product set of having a card present solution, which is a terminal with Visa, MasterCard, Amex, Apple Pay, Google Pay, Bitcoin, Lightning, all in one. So that's one machine, one device, so that's always there. Whether you get one payment in Bitcoin a year or 100% of your payments in Bitcoin a year, it's irrelevant. It's that single device and it's super easy to use. And then that only solves the payment side. If you're a hospitality business, you have to be able to cater for your inventory, stock management. So, you know, for the uninitiated, you can think of us as you might think of Square. So in the US, Square is a very big entity. We have all of the EPOS inventory, staff management, reporting, all of the toolkits that a merchant needs to go to market. So that is our core card present solution. We also have QR code capabilities. Again, post-COVID outcome was venues putting QR codes on tables or even hotel rooms using it. So you scan the QR code, you can either place an order and then check out, or you can just settle your bill without having to wait for bar staff or hospitality staff to bring it. You know, having that then transact through the gateway meant that then we could cater for online e-commerce merchants. And there's a much bigger market share, a much bigger volume. So for the card present physical merchants, you can think of us as you might think of Square. For the online e-commerce retailers, think of us perhaps more as Stripe or Adyen. We don't have all of the features and toolkit yet that we would like to have. That's coming. That's in the roadmap. That's what Ben and team are working hard on. But if you just need to try and process straightforward transactions of high volume, we've got you covered. So it's really that broad covering of products and capabilities that means that we can truly state in market that we're taking Bitcoin adoption and the usage of Bitcoin as money in a medium exchange to the next level, because it will always be there, always on. If you don't need it today, that's fine. Just leave it on in the background and use it for tomorrow. And as the world coalesces around Bitcoin and as the volume of transactions and interest in using Bitcoin as money grows, then we will have a great footprint. And we see our mission as building the destinations and endpoints for people to spend their Bitcoin. Other people are building infrastructure. Other people are building incredible software solutions at the protocol level. We're building the places that people, as humans and Bitcoiners, can go and spend the Bitcoin when they eventually want to.
Lynn and I are partners at Baselayer Advisors, where we use our network of venture capital partners and startup founders to connect investors with unique opportunities within the Bitcoin innovation space. Alongside this, we help startup founders with their growth and fundraising. Visit our website's advisory section to learn more.
Ben, that feels like a perfect segue into your sharing a little bit about your background with us, because what I have learned about you is that you live on a Bitcoin standard and you're a longtime Bitcoiner. We'd love to hear your journey about how you were introduced to it and how you operate in the world. And obviously that's why you became attracted to what you're building at Musket.
Absolutely. So I've always been interested in freedom technologies. So technologies that enable people to have more self-sovereignty, more control over their own lives, and less control from others, whether that is government or institutional control. Regardless, I believe people should have more fundamental freedom. In my younger days, I always thought money was an unsolvable problem. I always thought there's all of these good things we can do. We can build communities that work together. We can build alternative education systems to bypass government education systems. We can build alternative shops and farms and that kind of thing. But money, I don't see any way to do that in a decentralized way. I don't see any way to fix the problem of how money is controlled. That looks like it's always going to come from a government. I was also always a very technical person. So, you know, I was very interested in technology in general. And I sort of fell into, I guess what you'd call the cypherpunk kind of world. You know, a lot of cryptography and software development on open systems, that kind of thing. And it was around 2010, I kind of stumbled across this cypherpunk mailing list where people were talking about this project called Bitcoin. And it seemed really quite interesting at first. You know, it was like this kind of idea of doing money in a different way, doing it in a way that would be decentralized, something which kind of spoke to all of the things that I was already interested in, but for money, something I'd previously thought was impossible. Around that time, I also met my wife. I became a father. There were lots of distractions in my life. So I had mined about 4 blocks on my own using CPU mining on the desktop client, and I deleted it. I had 200 Bitcoin and I just hit the delete button and it was gone because it didn't seem interesting enough at the time, I guess. You know, it was this interesting thing, but I had other priorities. I had other things going on in my life. And about a year later, I rediscovered it. And I think it was because somebody mentioned it on the website Slashdot, sort of news for nerds, stuff that matters was the title of that news organization. And people were talking about Bitcoin as this thing where people are buying illegal substances online using the Silk Road. And hold on, if it's like that, why hasn't somebody shut this thing down yet? Why hasn't somebody found the way to kill Bitcoin? So I looked into it in more detail because this actually seemed like an interesting thing. You know, how hasn't it been killed yet? And the more I looked into it, the more I realized you can't stop it. You cannot destroy Bitcoin. It's actually impossible. Bitcoin exists because it is a perfect decentralized system with the right kinds of incentives in place to keep it running. Everybody has their own role in it, whether you're a node operator, whether you're just running a light client talking to a node, whether you're a miner. They all have their own unique incentives and their own unique ways of interacting with it. And that's what keeps the system running. That was fascinating. And from there, I kind of went down the rabbit hole. I was working at a very large corporation at the time, multinational, nothing to do with money, nothing to do with finance, anything like that. It was a printer company. And I spent probably 3 to 4 years trying to convince the company I was working for to do something with Bitcoin. They wouldn't. They weren't interested. You know, nearly 50,000 employees, global company, headquarters in Japan. It's not the kind of company which is going to all of a sudden just say, okay, let's do something with this nascent money technology. So even after I'd been with the company for 17 years, I said to myself, no, I'd kick myself if I didn't work on Bitcoin. So I have to do that. I have to leave what I'm doing. And so since sort of in 2017, start 2018, I've been working exclusively in the Bitcoin space. Worked for a couple of small mining companies, worked for Lightning Labs as an engineering manager, worked for Swan Bitcoin engineering management as well. So yeah, I've worked for some well-known companies in the space. But my main focus had always been the reason that I was interested in Bitcoin to begin with. Actual peer-to-peer decentralized money, an alternative monetary system that people can use, which isn't bound by all of the problems that traditional money has. So I wanted to work for somebody who cared about Bitcoin as a medium of exchange. I wanted my focus and my work to be Bitcoin as money. So when I met David in Edinburgh, I was there, by the way, just because I hadn't been to a conference in a while because of COVID, and it was time to go to a conference, and that one seemed fun. Edinburgh is a great city, so it was kind of random that I was there, so very good luck. But met David, started talking about this, and it kind of clicked. I think he realized it's something that I would be incredibly good at doing, and it's something that I am incredibly passionate about doing. So that's how I stumbled into Bitcoin and stumbled into Musket.
There's a few threads to pull on there. First of all, I mean, we'll love what you guys are doing at Musket, and let's get a little bit more into the core proposition and roadmap for what you guys are building. But you know, what you mentioned there, Ben, is interesting. The fact that you previously thought money was unsolvable. Personally, when I first got into Bitcoin,
I came, keep in mind, from a background of economics and math, that's what I had studied. And until I read the Bitcoin white paper, I realized I had never even thought about, I mean, you had clearly thought about it and you had gone to the conclusion that it was unsolvable. For me at that point, I realized I had never even questioned money. And I think a lot of people probably fall into those categories. But yeah, I mean, to your point, in the white paper, it's peer-to-peer electronic cash, right? That's the title. I don't know about you guys, but when I first started giving a lot of thought to Bitcoin, I came to the general structure that this would evolve first as a store of value, then move on to medium of exchange, and then move on to a unit of account. And, you know, here we are, 2026. Bitcoin has been around for a while. Before getting back to Musket, I just want to kind of put a spotlight into this payment side of things. And we are seeing, Lynn and I, a little more activity on different startups building infrastructure for this payment side. But can you guys, either David or Ben, tell the audience why it's so important that Bitcoin be used as payment, not just as this digital gold?
I mean, I can give my view on that, but I think, you know, the best answer there, let's do it once. Ben's the most qualified. He's done probably 5 years more thinking than I have on this. So Ben, you take this one.
Sure. So I would say something cannot be a store of value without also being a medium of exchange. Medium of exchange doesn't just mean place to place. It also means from time to time. If I want to receive some money now and then spend that money later, it is being a store of value. It is storing the value for the time, but it is also being a medium of exchange because I am receiving it at one point and I'm sending it out at another point. If I can't do that, then there is no value that is actually being stored by the store of value. So I actually think it's kind of a false way of looking at it to think of store of value and medium of exchange as being two separate things. I think they are very, very intimately tied together, and one can't really work without the other. They have to go together. I'd also point out actually something I often see. There's this nice quote, "The future is here already. It's just not evenly distributed yet." Bitcoin is already a common medium of exchange in some small places. It tends to be places where money is already the most broken. So if you travel around the world, go to the places where money doesn't work very well, places in Africa, places in Central America, you will find people have problems with money because the money itself is broken, because there are authoritarian regimes who are controlling what they're allowed to do with their money. Because there are oligarchic banks who are basically saying, you know, we get to control everything, so we're going to, you know, take everything we can in fees, and you have no choice but to use us. So there are so many ways in which money is broken in different places. Those are the places that need Bitcoin the most, and those are the places where Bitcoin is already being used the most as a medium of exchange. In more developed, modern, Western countries, I guess you could say, we don't have such strong immediate need for Bitcoin as a medium of exchange in day-to-day life, so our adoption of it has been slower. In places like the US or the UK, most of Europe, Bitcoin adoption is kind of optional. Right now, I can walk into most places and just use my bank card and it just works. And there's no strong incentives for a lot of people. I think those will come. I think as money gets more and more broken, people are going to need to escape into something else, and Bitcoin is there and ready for them. We also need to be building the systems which enable people to actually do that. If we don't build the structure, then people can't as easily escape into it. In sort of the developing world, that's less of an issue. Somebody can just run a mobile wallet on their phone and send and receive Bitcoin, and that's good enough for a little shop sort of in the middle of nowhere. That's all they need. But that's not what's needed. We need a lot more than that in, you know, our sort of societies that we live in. It's not going to work for a shop in London to just run a little application on their phone. Like David was saying earlier, all of those problems. Somebody comes in and says, yeah, I want to pay in Bitcoin. Okay. How do we make sure it's done properly? How do we make sure it's safe? How do we make sure it's logged correctly? How do we make sure that all the tax reporting is done right? Make sure the tax department doesn't come after them and, you know, end up costing them way more than they ever made on any of their sales. All those sorts of things are the things that we need to be building in order to enable proper Bitcoin adoption in the West. But I think it's a mistake to think that Bitcoin adoption isn't happening at all. because we haven't built all of those things out in the West yet, Bitcoin adoption is happening. We just need to make it happen smoother and easier along with everything else which is going on.
And just to add on to that, look, I think if we didn't exist as Musket, there would be a whole host of other companies out there promoting the idea of Bitcoin as money, but providing an incomplete solution. I'm going to go so far as to say that we're probably the best option on the planet for the acceleration of Bitcoin as money. I hesitated there because I was thinking actually Square are doing quite a good job right now. There's some things that they're doing that I'm not a huge fan of. But if you look globally, who are the big payments processors? Who are the acquirers? They don't get it. They don't understand Bitcoin. They don't understand why. They're in the crypto gang. They think people want to pay with their various dog tokens and their pictures of cars on the blockchain. It's nonsense. That's not where this is taking us. Bitcoin is money. First and foremost, it's a store of value. But if it only ever remained as a store of value, then actually, I would argue that it's failed. The whole point, as you put, you mentioned back to the white paper. The whole point is, and Ben has touched on this, is freedom money for people to transact globally without the constraints of control and government and governance and permissions that we find in the existing system. So if you see it as freedom money, and in many cases, literally a lifeline for people to transact, and if you define the ability to transact between people as almost a fundamental human right, then Bitcoin becomes something much deeper, much more important. And I think that's what the existing acquirers of the world will miss. You know, the corporations are too big to implement such a radical toolkit. They will add it in a custodial way alongside all of the other crypto tokens, likely via some kind of plugin, but they won't do it in a way that actually fosters or promotes the idea of peer-to-peer money. So it's, you know, just be another way of paying like a gift card or a voucher. Now, that is what we do to an extent. We actually say, just think of Bitcoin in your gateway or at your payment device as though you might think of accepting a gift card or a voucher. But the fundamental difference is that we promote the ideology and importance of owning your own keys. So that self-custodial Bitcoin component. And we're building out a suite of products and toolkits that make it easier to build a circular economy so that people can spend their Bitcoin and earn rewards in Bitcoin. Merchants can accept it and safely store it and then also pay their supply chain in that. They can also then issue maybe time-released invoices so that you move towards a streaming money rather than waiting 30 days to pay an invoice. Maybe invoices between Bitcoin companies are paid on a day-by-day basis or a minute-by-minute basis because the cost per transaction is so low. So I think the way that we're doing it is fundamentally different because we're thinking about it from a Bitcoin first lens rather than just a payments lens.
Yeah, many interesting things that we can touch on there. But Ben, I think your point about the adoption and the usage being easier and faster in regions where the money is more broken. I mean, when I was introduced to Bitcoin in 2012, I'd been living in Mexico for a number of years at that time, and just the difficulty of sending money to a housekeeper on an urgent basis when she had an emergency from the US or the cost involved with that. I mean, just the pain points, suffering through a devaluation myself when I'd never even considered the fact that that could occur. And, you know, it's like, and so I think I understood Bitcoin's value proposition much earlier than somebody of my peers, and I came from Wall Street before I moved to Mexico. So, you know, there are things, but when you're dealing in a market in London and you're going out to merchants, I mean, I think now there's a better understanding that Bitcoin Rails, the Bitcoin protocol, can help reduce the time involved. It operates on a 24/7 basis. The fact that the cost with the Lightning Network underscoring it, it's like your transaction speed is very quick as traditional rails. So there are efficiencies in the system. But beyond that, when you're talking to your merchants, when you're talking to people in your target market right now, do you find that it's only based on the efficiency of moving money, or are they understanding a little bit more now after, I mean, in the years post-COVID and all the difference in money supply increase and inflation and macroeconomic awareness that I think is becoming a little bit more mainstream. What are you feeling when you're talking to people? What are their motivations for adopting a more complete payment suite that includes Bitcoin? And are they thinking that they need to have a little bit on their balance sheet as well?
So it's a really good question, and I haven't got amazing news for you and your listeners at this point, but that's why we exist and we're going to change that. So when we talk to merchants today, the majority of conversation is about, if we're in the hospitality sort of card present space, it's about the features and functionality of the EPOS system. And the EPOS, the difference between, so the PDQ machine, the pretty damn quick machine, the tap and pay machine, that's for payment. The EPOS machine is your inventory, your stock control, your staff management. That's where all the products are. And that all gets collected in an order and sent off to the kitchen for preparation, etc. The majority of focus is on the EPOS. And it's the features, the capability, and what it does and how it will transform the day-to-day operations. Is it easy for the staff to check in? When a staff member walks in, can they check in from their phone because their phone has also detected the Wi-Fi on the site, and then their shift can begin, rather than someone fraudulently claiming that the staff member has started work 2 hours before they actually did, and, sort of the employer losing out. The detail and the tracking on the products and the services, so that we can figure out the most sold items, the most paired items, coffee and a cake, or, banana and something, whatever it may be, still water. Having that data rich level insights that helps a merchant figure out what the most profitable items are, the patterns of their user base and their customer base, is far more important than the payment side. What we see right now in the UK and Europe is payments is becoming a commoditized outcome. There's a race to the bottom and to the cost base. The cost base being the interchange rates that Visa, MasterCard, Amex charge in their model. So all acquirers are out in the market. They all have to pay Visa, MasterCard rates. On top of that, there's the acquirer markup. For their added services. Those services could be a range of things. And in our case, our markup covers typically the EPOS license software, the Bitcoin gateway components, and a few other bits and pieces that we throw into the proposition. And we give that bundle together at a 1%, typically at a 1% rate. If we have customers with a much higher volume, then we can reduce that rate. So when we talk to merchants, It's the functionality, it's how their business works. It's almost, I sound far too much like a management consultant now, but it's sort of, I can't let that background die too early. But it's, we're solving the client problems. What's the problem that hospitality merchant has that we can solve with our functionality? Bitcoin is the first thing that we talk about. And the last thing that we talk about is just maybe the first 5% and the last 5%. The 80 to 90% in the middle is everything else. What are your card rates? How, are you cheaper than the competition, either on a rate basis or a total cost of ownership basis? What's the functionality? Do you accept Apple Pay, Google Pay, and all of the other different payment methods? And if you can stay even on all of those and be competitive and demonstrate value, then we're finding that the Bitcoin angle gives us an edge, because it's the way in, and it reduces and removes all of the friction in a conversation with a merchant. Normally when we go in and we don't mention Bitcoin, we literally get told to star asterisk exclamation mark off and leave the premises immediately. Payments is a commoditized outcome. The margins aren't there in the way that they used to be. And it's a very sort of red ocean competitive landscape. So you have to differentiate based on value add, and Bitcoin alone is not enough. So we will talk to them. Merchants love it. They primarily love it from a PR and marketing angle. So when I said I got bad news, or the bad news is they're not seeing it necessarily through the lens that I would love them to see it through, of the importance of a macroeconomic, monetary shift perspective. We'll work on them over time, and we'll continue to give them some good education and marketing around that. And again, that's where I see ourselves as a critical friend to those merchants. It's very much a Trojan horse strategy that we operate right now. It's build their trust, deliver value and everything else, show them how good Bitcoin is from both a PR and marketing side and differentiation, but also really interesting things that they can do with it. And just to give you one example, one really useful thing that came up was there was a multinational franchise business, and they approached us and they said, look, we've got a problem with our settlement and our fees that we receive from our franchise owners every month. They owe us monthly a portion and a percentage of takings, but these are from all over the world. So they're transferring from all over East Asia to the UK, but it's actually denominated in dollars. So they were finding a lot of late fees, a lot of fees were and transfers were being held in accounts, and they were flagged as fraudulent. So there was actually a working capital challenge, and the CFO was saying, look, if you could enable this through Bitcoin or even through stablecoin in USDT, just a dollar denominated stablecoin over the Lightning Network, that would solve so many operational cash flow issues that we have in terms of collection. You know, we could likely reduce headcount by a couple of people because we don't have this entire cottage industry chasing invoices and chasing our franchisee fee. So, you know, I think it's still early. And our job and the reason we exist is to make Bitcoin frictionless and to demonstrate why it's better money and it's advantageous for all kinds of businesses for a multitude of reasons. And that will take time. And, you know, we're here to take it for a long run, to take that time to be ideally the best payments business on the planet so that there's no objection to a merchant using someone else instead of us, whether that's price, functionality, or something else.
You know, it's fascinating. You hit on, I think, some very important points there on your business approach, David, because you guys are, as you mentioned, payments has been a bit commoditized, and I think that's relatively easy to see. And you're not only coming from the Bitcoin angle, which of course, there's some significant cost savings there, as opposed to going through the Visa, MasterCard rails. MX, all of that, you eliminate some intermediaries. So there's some efficiency gains there. But, you know, it's very, what I found very interesting is that you also come at it from the entire back end kind of payroll inventory analytics angle. I have a good friend who is a founder of a company that does this type of analytics for HR and payroll in the construction industry. And I mean, there's many industries that are still extremely inefficient in how they handle payroll, clock in, clock out, handle inventory. You know, it's a lot of it is still done pen and paper in a lot of industries. And of course, small business owners and merchants are fall into that category, as you're explaining. So, I mean, just from a value proposition, I think you guys are coming at this very strong because it's two-sided, right? I mean, I'd be curious to know how that, some of those metrics or how you guys have been going about that early user acquisition, to put it that way. And also, what portion of your business is the e-commerce side, and what are the big differentiators there as far as your go-to-market?
Yeah, I'll talk a bit about go-to-market. I think it'd be good to tag Ben in after that on just to give an overview of the payroll product, because I think whilst we're building the destinations, we also need Bitcoin and Lightning in people's wallets, you know, in their pockets to spend. So I'll let Ben cover that piece in a second. But on the go-to-market, we're approaching it on all fronts. You know, it's I've got a fantastic chief revenue officer and sales team who are doing just incredible work right now. They're adding about 150 million on average a month to our pipeline. We make around about 0.35% net revenue per transaction. Because we're selling in, then we've got all of our Visa, MasterCard, and other costs to cover, and that margin is relatively low. So we have a dependent volume dependent focus. But by the end of this year, we should be approaching somewhere between 2,500 to 3,000 customers across the UK and Europe. Some of that will be through merger and acquisition activity, us buying business from existing customer books from competitors or other entities that just don't want to support them anymore. For us, that's great because it means that we can upsell our EPOS solution either through a higher rate or through or through license fees for the software itself. And then we can add the Bitcoin component in and make sure that, you know, ideally by the end of this, by Christmas 2026, we should see the UK light up in terms of the number of venues. That's the objective. We'll see how we get on. But that growth and that proliferation of adoption and venues that accept Bitcoin is what drives us. You know, we're sat here with about 900 million in the pipeline right now. We convert about 20% of that. It's a deal cycle time, about 45 days. Some of it is subject to various bits of engineering and code that needs to be developed. What we find is that no merchant is the same. As attractive as build once, repeat and execute many times is, every merchant has got some nuance on their capability. And you know, we're still early in our journey, so we know we can cater for a certain tranche of customers, and we're very good at building a pipeline, but we're still building out that engineering, which is what we're in the middle of our Series A, or just starting our Series A funding round four, so I can arm Ben with, well, I can equip Ben with an army of developers to continue building, broadening that toolkit. But it is direct outreach. We have a lot of targeted customer lists looking at the types of plugins, the types of websites people use to make sure that we can add our Musket gateway. We then have community sessions. So there's a few areas in the UK that we're targeting through Chambers of Commerce and bringing, 20 to 30 retailers in a room together and making sure that we give them the pitch about the business. But we also have significant partnerships. You know, one such is Gibraltar International Bank, a small bank in the global grand scheme of banks, but it's a really nice partnership. We are effectively their preferred or exclusive payments partner. So when we go out to Gibraltar, we have a great relationship with them. They're very well respected in the community and the local area. And it's been very, very productive for us to win business there. Some, you know, for anyone in the UK, some really good brand names that we're working with now. Early Learning Center, which is a children's, you know, buggies and clothing. Next, a homewares and fashion retailer. Pizza Hut, which I think your North American cohort may well know of. Marks and Spencer's, maybe you guys have heard of as well. And, you know, there's conversations with other brands that we're talking to that they're franchises in that territory. But, and we're starting with the payments only product, but we will roll Bitcoin out over time. So that's been a very fruitful avenue. A lot of the focus since, I guess, towards the end of the year has been on e-commerce. You know, we recognize that hospitality is, margins are under pressure. The economy is tough, certainly across Europe right now. And you know, the sort of constant barrage of taxation hasn't been helpful. So we've put a lot of business development effort into e-commerce, and Ben and the team have done a great job of building out our plugin capabilities across Magento, Adobe, WooCommerce, along with the hosted checkout. So, you know, anyone doing business online, we can support you. I'd say of the 900 million or so in the pipeline, north about 60% of it is e-commerce. So we will see a lot more entities onboarding in the e-commerce space. But, you know, again, as I say, our mission is both the adoption of Bitcoin as money. It's, yes, volume matters to us, but philosophically and ideologically, we also want the corner shop. We also want the coffee shop, the bar, the restaurant that maybe only does 300-400K of volume a year, but as a destination to be able to spend the Bitcoin and use it and interact with it person to person, that's a fundamental part of the business. So we're never going to take our eye off that.
So that plays into the payroll part of the equation that you guys are launching into. And you mentioned Ben could share a little bit more about what you're building out with the payroll tool.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that we realized sort of relatively early is that by creating merchant adoption tools, we are facilitating the ability for a lot of different inputs of Bitcoin to come to one output, the merchant. People, there's a lot of customers, they come into a shop, they buy things, and it all goes into a single point, which is the merchant. We realized pretty quickly that the exact opposite of that is also useful and relatively easy once you've built the ability to do exactly that. And that's one central point sending out to a lot of people, which is exactly what a payroll system is. So, you know, one employer, many employees, and you can make payments going out. So we obviously, there was also the business interest in doing that. That's what we built. We've built a payroll system. At the moment, internally, we're calling it BIX. That's the Bitcoin Integrated Compensation System. And the reason we call it that is actually that we do see it as potentially more than just payroll. You know, there are other types of compensation which a company could be interested in doing. It could be for bonuses. It could be for paying external contractors. There's various different kinds of payments that can be made. The concept behind it is quite simply that you have an employer with one or more people who they want to pay. Inside the system, you can call them employees, and you set up an amount and then simply hit a button and payments go out to those people. What's actually happening is really quite interesting because we are a Lightning first company. We see on-chain payments as being a useful necessity for large payments in general. To you know, buy a car, you're probably not doing that over Lightning. Lightning is really the infrastructure of peer-to-peer Bitcoin payments in the real world. So we've architected the entirety of BIX also around Lightning payments. Each person can put in each employee can have a Lightning address either imported into the system or manually entered by the person when they're invited into the system. And then the payroll administrator quite simply needs to put a certain amount, put the a necessary amount of money onto our partner exchange, stored in fiat, specify the amount in fiat that the people are going to be paid out, and then hit the button once a month to make the payouts. Everything gets automated behind the scenes, and the individual Lightning payments are sent out to each of the people who they need to go to. Of course, everything is fully logged, so we know, you know, what if any payments failed, something didn't work for whatever reason, maybe the address was incorrect or it used to be correct and it's no longer, wasn't enough money, whatever the case may be, everything gets logged and recorded so we can track what's going on and resolve any issues that come up. So it's a fairly straightforward but very powerful and flexible system for making payments out to people from a single employer. If you imagine it now side by side with the merchant solution, you can imagine a merchant essentially running both of those things. They are running the merchant solution to receive payments from customers. They're running BIX to be able to pay out their employees either bonuses or tips or even regular monthly payroll and use both those systems simultaneously, even with the same money. So you could have Bitcoin in, Bitcoin out, starting to build true circular economies.
It's another, I think, just psychologically, another feeling when you earn Bitcoin as well. So I absolutely love what you guys are doing because you're really kind of hitting a few endpoints there. And when is the payroll solution expected to roll out, by the way? I'm not sure if you touched on it.
David, you want to talk a bit about that? Or
well, I'm going to defer to you on this one, Ben. But look, the intention is H1. We're in final testing right now. I will always look to Ben. Is it ready? Ben will always say, it's not perfect. But the thing is, perfect is the enemy of good. So I think, we've done a lot of testing. I love it. I think it's just such an incredible product. So, you know, I would ship it tomorrow, but we're going to do some final bug testing. It's out there, hopefully before summer.
The software is fully functional right now. We're using it in internal testing. It does what it needs to do. We've got a partner company we're working with who are also, doing their testing of it, feeding back, hey, it would be nice if it did this, it'd be nice if it did that, so feature requests, maybe the occasional bug, that kind of thing. But yeah, it's a feature complete application at the moment. Yeah, within the first half of this year is absolutely a reasonable expection for that.
And as we go to market with that one, I think the benefit it depends how you see it. It's enterprise grade, so it could well be I don't want to overuse the word commoditized, but a lot of careers can often be commoditized. If you look at the accounting industry, there's very little difference between working for one firm versus another. It just depends on their ability to win business. So your day-to-day job could be largely similar. But if one of them decides to actually pay bonuses or, rewards in Bitcoin, then that might be a way of attracting a new talent pool or even retaining, having better retention metrics for HR teams and internal sort of talent management programs. Because, I remember when I was at EY PwC, you'd get occasional ad hoc bonuses for good work. You know, maybe it's a £50 voucher for Bed Bath and Beyond, or you know, a dinner at Soho House or the Ivy or something, whatever it may be. Well, great. You know, I'd love to use that as a voucher to go for a nice restaurant, a nice dinner as a thank you. But you know what? It'd be really valuable. I'd love that £50 in Bitcoin that I didn't have yesterday and I do today. And in the future, that's worth £500. You know, just a really nice way of incentivizing staff rewards outside of paying salaries in Bitcoin is the way that we see it and that we will be taking it to market.
You know, I'd like to ask you guys a little bit. I mean, as you're talking about product development and different services that you're offering, you know, I don't know. My perception is that the UK has a kind of a heavy hand on a regulatory basis, and I'd love to just get your thoughts on how does that interplay with your product roadmap, and how tough is it to get a regulatory approval, or what do you need to do in order to roll some of these things out? The taxation impact of that. I know we're running close to time, but I'd just love to hear how that impacts all of your decision making from both a technical standpoint and a strategic standpoint.
For better or worse, I tend to take somewhat of a avant-garde swashbuckling approach to product development. I don't respect really particularly the views of the Bank of England nor the regulators when it comes to Bitcoin, because I think they're so far behind and so archaic in their analysis of it and their thinking of it that there's just no point letting them influence our outcomes. If we're forced to, and if we are innovating and building products that we think drive the adoption of Bitcoin, are good for people, are good for the world, we will leave and we will relocate elsewhere to a better jurisdiction that we can execute our product roadmap in. I've got no problem doing that. I don't want to, but it's getting quite tricky. It's getting quite difficult. The noose is tightening in the UK, and you know, I don't want to be one of those statistics that have relocated to the Middle East. But again, if we have to, we have to, and it will pass. I think that my comment at the beginning there somewhat facetious, but all of this eventually passes. Bitcoin is inevitable. The adoption of it, the acceptance of it, the removal of capital gains from a taxation perspective, the deregulation or the positive regulation embrace, all of that is inevitable. It's just we're in a tricky period where the old world and the powers that be are nervous because they've realized they cannot truly control and stop something in the way that perhaps they used to in the past. So as long as the UK sells as well, we will build our and continue to execute here. Right now, it's unregulated as a payment asset, so you're allowed to use it in payments. So, you know, we have got no real restrictions upon us right now at this point. The only restrictions are you can't act as an exchange or a custodian, which we don't either. So we don't have any Bitcoin. We don't touch the Bitcoin. We're not allowed to. But even if that wasn't in place, we still would have engineered everything the way that we do because we believe in self-sovereignty and self-custodial Bitcoin. So I think, you know, we will toe the line with the regulators. We will engage them. We are going to be applying for for payments licenses and other things in the traditional finance sense. We will be going to make sure that we get our crypto asset license as well. But I think the regulators are so far behind right now. They're still playing catch up, even with policy decisions at the central government level, which then have to filter down through the various levels. But there's just no point waiting. We have to just execute, build as much as we can, ship it into market. And if the regulators deem that that's problematic, then those goods and services can be, and the UK market can be serviced elsewhere. We know what we believe in, and we're going to stick with that. And we're here for the long run. You know, Bitcoin is money, simple.
Thank you both for your very informative takes there. I think it's fair to say, Lynn, that we both very strongly agree with, you know, with some of the just core messages that you touched on there, David, that Bitcoin is bigger than all of us. And that goes for governments as well. And you also kind of hinted at that in the beginning, Ben, when you were talking about your initial journey, that you, when you realize that this can't be stopped, really. I'm reminded me a little bit of right after Silk Road, Mt. Gox, and China ban. And when I came to that realization as well, I mean, it's a powerful light bulb when you realize, I mean, this is just at its core open source math and software. And there is really no way that you know, UK or, you know, US or any other big government can, you know, they can maybe slow it down temporarily, controlling on and off ramps and doing other regulatory loops and hurdles. But I mean, what I'm getting at really is that both your messages are spot on. And what I really like about what you guys are doing at Musket is I'm hopeful that regulators will come to their senses on this, because what you guys are doing is a very kind of in your face economic empowerment for the good of, you know, my jurisdiction. If you're a regulator and you supposedly are pro small business prosperity, economic prosperity for your citizens, I mean, you're providing real value. It's very much in your face. I mean, you're providing solutions for the backbone of the economy, soon the payroll side, inventory for all these merchants, e-commerce. I mean, I think the case is very strong for regulators to have this click that this is actually I have more to gain than to lose with this technology and integrating it into my economy. So, I mean, that to say, congrats on everything you're building. I mean, I think it's an extremely business savvy, innovative and important solution. First mover advantage is real as well. So we'll certainly be, you know, following what you guys are building at Musket. And, you know, maybe final question on my end, David and Ben, as far as your geographic footprint and what that roadmap is, what are you guys thinking there? I mean, where would you like to expand to over the next 5 years? What can we expect?
Well, look, if we're successful in the next few years, I think Ben is going to be the first on the list for a private jet, because most of his team are in various parts of the continent. I think, first of all, from an internal perspective, we believe in employing the best people. And, you know, in Ben, we've got access to some of the best Bitcoin Lightning engineers on the planet. It just so happens they love being digitally native, or nomadic rather. We've got engineers in Paraguay, in Brazil, in Romania, in Czech Republic, in the UK. So it makes it challenging to get face to face time. But I think that's possibly a reflection of the global nature of Bitcoin. So, you know, finding those people and that talent is really hard. But I think Ben's done a fantastic job of that. Go to market is slightly different. We have to take a very specific market by market approach. That effectively means physical boots on the ground, and also some regulatory coverage and legal top cover as well in the structures. So right now it's the UK and Europe. The next market that we move into is most likely dictated by whoever writes the biggest check in our Series A round, if I'm honest. Bitcoin, you know, our EPOS software can go anywhere. With our payments partnerships in the background, we've got optionality about where we execute. So I would say right now it's sort of a race between the GCC region, a headquarters out of, or a regional hub out of the UAE. I've just come back from a very valuable trip in Doha. So, and you know, there's a lot of investment and entrepreneurial and technology focus in Doha itself, but it's not a great region or Doha and Qatar is not a very good Bitcoin region. So it could well be a center of excellence both for funding and software engineering for the non-Bitcoin related products, but it's not a good one, particularly for how we execute regulatory. So it's most likely that with the opportunities and growth of an expansion of hospitality sector, that the UAE, so Dubai or Abu Dhabi, again, I was in Abu Dhabi before Christmas, and there was so many great conversations there. That it was such a pro-Bitcoin environment that would make a good center. At the same time, I've had some very valuable conversations with entities in the US. So North America, if we proceed with one of the potential options on Series A investment from North America, that will help us with our money transmission licenses. And it means that we can, again, accelerate our presence in the US using someone else's regulatory umbrella and expand there. And the North American market is prime for our products. You know, we would sell incredibly well there. The challenge is it's likely quite expensive from where we are in the UK and Europe to actually launch into the US. So all regions are on the table right now. Bitcoin is global. Our mission is to drive Bitcoin as money and medium of exchange as fast as we can. So the biggest markets with the best bang for buck or bang for Bitcoin would be our targets.
And David, we're recording this in mid-February of 2026. Can you just speak a little bit about the timing of your Series A and what your funding roadmap is looking like?
Yeah, I mean, look, we're starting it now because finding the pools of capital are very hard. Certainly, it's been a very difficult environment in the UK. And the UK doesn't necessarily particularly understand Bitcoin. Hence, a couple of trips I've had to the Middle East, which is more favorable. So we're hoping to close it this year. Perfect timing would be around September, because between now and then, between February and September, we should be on track for our £1 billion volume on board by then. You know, we should end March around about 300 to 400 million of onboarded annual volume. So that run rate demonstrates growth traction. We should be nearing the 3,000 customer mark. So we'd have enough evidence base that we haven't just built some tech. We know that we've got a go-to-market proposition that scales, that we sell, and we're doing very well with. And by about November this year, we start to generate some profit. So on an annualized run rate basis. So we're coming out of the early stage into our growth stage, and we're starting the foundations of the Series A round now, just because the previous rounds have taken between 9 and 12 months to close. You know, we've raised 5.5 million GBP since June 2023. So we've been very lean with how we've executed, and we've grown to a team of 22 FTs right now, and we don't really need to grow much more. It's probably 6 or 7 FTs additional, both in engineering, sales, and product that we need. But yeah, we can scale globally from the basis that we have without a huge amount of incremental cost. So I think we're positioned well. Timing wise, yeah, Q3 would be perfect for us to settle. And that's likely a 20 million GBP raise that we're looking at.
We'll definitely have to have a conversation. I don't know if that's a year from now or when, but we'll have to check back in. I mean, it sounds like you guys are well poised. Your roadmap is well defined, and you guys are clearly building some great solutions. So, I mean, congrats, really, David and Ben. It's great to see. I mean, Lynn and I feel lucky that we get to speak to a lot of different founders and startups and business models in the space. And in the past few months, I would say, Lynn, I don't know what your take is, but I do feel like the payment infrastructure is quickly ramping up, and that's what's really going to get this, you know, kind of global footprint on peer-to-peer money going. So you guys are a very important part of that, and you know, we appreciate the time. Maybe as a send-off, where can people get in touch? How can they contact you guys?
Yeah, sure. Look, I'm pretty findable on social media, so Musket_David on X.
And I think most people tend to find me pretty easily as well, but for anyone looking for me, I'm Ben_Duval on pretty much all social media.
Echoing what Israel said, thank you very much for your time. I loved what Ben had said earlier about how you can't have store of value without medium of exchange, and that interplay between the two. And I've never heard it phrased that way, and it just makes total sense. And it shows where the value proposition of Musket is and why it's such an important tool to be part of the Bitcoin ecosystem. So thank you for building it.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us on.